comes the sun. Good evening. It is 5 p.m. on Thursday, June 25th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents, your weekly roundup of the latest limestone local news. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Coming up in today's episode, a motion from City Council's last meeting officially renaming Strathcona Park's Indian Road after years of debate. And some messages directly from the City of Kingston this week, including your guide to Canada Day in Kingston. And some messages directly from the City this week, including your guide to Canada Day in Kingston, how the City is celebrating the FIFA World Cup, welcoming Kingston Fire and Rescue's new deputy chief, and the launch of the unique Fines for Food pilot. We'll also run through your weather and traffic report for this upcoming weekend and a few events to keep on your radar from CFRC's events calendar. Without further delay, let's dive in. After years of debate, Indian Road has a new name. At Tuesday's meeting, Council voted 8-5 to officially rename Indian Road as Aki Road. The decision follows a process launched in June 2025. When Council voted 7-3 to begin consultations to choose a new name after concerns were raised that the term Indian is outdated and derogatory. Located in Strathcona Park neighborhood, Indian Road was named in the 1950s, along with Mohawk Place, Algonquin Terrace, and Arrowhead Place, in reference to the Indigenous history of the region. The level of resident support has remained a point of contention throughout the process. Unofficial door-to-door canvasses conducted by councillors over the years have produced differing results. According to the staff report, 46 residents responded to the final shortlist survey. While 27 residents selected none of the above, Aki received the most support among the proposed names, receiving 14 votes and ultimately becoming staff's recommended option. Before council debated the motion, members heard from residents on both sides of the issue.
For me, Indian Road is where I was raised. My mother's lived there for 62 years. It's part of her life. It's part of her legacy. I feel like it's being erased. The outcome was fixed before the consultation began.
Honoring First Nations in Strathcona Park. This is precisely what the initiative is all about. And it seems to have gotten a little lost tonight. And in the last few days of manipulated data, media drama. Yes, it will take time for some, but I think we will all be very proud of our new street name. It appropriately honors Indigenous people.
Kingston Native Center and Language Nest Executive Director Brandon Miracle also urged Council to support the renaming.
Keeping Indian and Indian Road asks Indigenous people in Kingston to continue seeing this history reflected on a public street name in an official capacity within the City of Kingston. As though the harm attached to this word, Indian, is less important than the inconvenience of change. Council has the opportunity this evening to choose language that better reflects the community that I know and that I believe that Kingston wants to be.
When the matter came before Council, Strathcona Councillor Jeff McLaren brought the option not to move forward with the change to the floor.
If you've ever had a sentimental value to something that is in your past, then you can feel what people are about to lose. There are a lot of people on the street who have built their lives on this street, and we are thinking of taking that away from them.
Councillor Connie Glenn also opposed the change due to the initial consultation process, or lack thereof.
We talk a lot about good process. We talk a lot about good governance. We did not demonstrate that. We talk about evidence, and what we got were individual members of council, no offense, going out and doing this. This was not a process that was set in motion and done in a way that we do most processes. I've heard both sides of this. We've heard that some people are upset. We've heard some people don't want to change. We've heard some people would like a change. But overwhelmingly, what I've heard is that this has become something that we didn't do in a way that was appropriate. So I'm not going to force a change when we haven't done the proper process.
Councillor Lisa Osanek also noted the burden for residents to update addresses and personal records.
That's a lot of extra work for all the residents on the street now with the new street name, and I feel badly about that.
Others, like Councillors Brandon Tozzo and Gregory Ridge, argued that despite those concerns, it was time for the city to move forward with the change.
I think we should change the name of the road. I think it's fairly clear from some of the delegations and just from where the trends are going in other cities that this is a derogatory and offensive name. I think the sooner we can get the process started of renaming this, the better.
The word Indian has been derogatory, deemed derogatory for a very long time. I also want to say I empathize with the residents and hear their concerns and frustrations, which were very clearly expressed during the city's consultation process. And that empathy is part of the reason that we on the original motion and recommendations from staff that we're including goodwill payments, because we understand that this is a burden and an imposition onto the residents. And I don't think that we should be pretending otherwise, because that would be disrespectful. We're also setting up clinics to assist with changing identification, paid mail forwarding for a year, and a plaque recognizing the history of the neighborhood. The place is not changing. The neighborhood is not changing. It is the name that is changing.
Council ultimately voted 8-5 in favor of the renaming package. The approved plan also includes $250 in compensation for each residential unit on Indian Road, new street and park signage, and a commemorative plaque recognizing the neighborhood's history, the significance of the new names, and the city's commitment to reconciliation. Staff have been directed to complete the renaming process by the first quarter of 2027. During that time, residents will receive support updating their addresses, including a city-produced checklist, dedicated Service Ontario assistance, and 1 year of free mail forwarding through Canada Post.
Getting into some messages directly from the city this week, know before you go how to have the best time at Canada Celebrates the FIFA World Cup 2026. Heading to downtown Kingston for Canada Celebrates the FIFA World Cup 2026 event on Saturday, June 27th? There's a lot happening in downtown Kingston on June 27th. Residents and visitors are advised to plan ahead and consider using public transit. Here are some tips once again directly from the City of Kingston for making the most of your experience on June 27th. Canada Celebrates takes place in Springer Market Square from 1:30 to 9:30 p.m. Canada Celebrates is a rain or shine event, so keep an eye on the weather forecast and bring everything you need for a day outside, including hats, umbrellas, sunscreen, and water bottles. The city encourages residents and visitors to take public transit where possible. Plan your route using the Kingston Transit Trip Planner. Spring at Market Square is about 7 minutes away from the downtown bus transfer station on foot. There are also a number of park and ride locations throughout the city that allow you to park for free before hopping on a bus. Standard bus fare is $3.50 per person over 14 years of age, and must be exact change. Children under 14 ride for free. If you're driving, the city has parking lots and garages downtown within walking distance to Springer Market Square. Learn more about special event parking, including walking times and rates in municipal parking lots, on the city's website. A limited number of accessible parking spaces will be available on a first-come, first-served basis on Clarendon Street between King Street and Wellington Street. An accessible event drop-off and pickup area will also be on Clarendon Street between Ontario and King Street. Check municipal511.ca to stay up to date on road closures. During this event, the following streets will be made pedestrian-only, except for emergency vehicles: Market Street, Brock Street from Ontario to Wellington Street, and King Street from Princess Street to Clarendon Street. The Ontario Brock parking lot will host the Kingston Public Market on Saturday and will not be available for parking before 6:30 p.m. Stop by the market before you visit Canada Celebrates and support local businesses. For more details about Canada Celebrates, including places to stay, eat, and visit, you can head to visitkingston.ca. Once again, that was a message directly from the city on FIFA World Cup celebrations this weekend. Looking ahead to another upcoming celebration, your guide to Canada Day in Kingston, free celebrations, and holiday service information. The City of Kingston wishes all residents a safe and happy upcoming Canada Day and extends special thanks to the people who will be working to keep our community running. Starting with the free Canada Day celebration in downtown, this Canada Day, join the city for the coolest party in Kingston. The city will host a free event at Confederation Park and Springer Market Square from 12 to 10 p.m., featuring live music, arts, and cultural programming, food vendors, a kids zone, and more. The Market Wing Cultural Space at City Hall will also be open 12 to 6 p.m. on Canada Day, featuring the new Music from Miles Around free exhibition sponsored by Empire Life. starting at 7 p.m., enjoy a free concert on the main stage in Springer Market Square, sponsored by WFCU, featuring Kingston-based DJ Dina and headlining act Soul Sublime. To learn more about what's on this July 1st and how to make the most of the day, visit the city's Canada Day event page. Keep yourself, your family, and your neighbors safe. Leave the fireworks to the pros. The city, in partnership with Kingston Fire and Rescue, encourages all community members to leave the fireworks show to the experts. The city will host a free fireworks display at Confederation Park starting at 10 p.m. If hosting friends or family, KFR reminds all residents that they must obtain a free open-air fire permit. Residents are required to read and comply with the full list of regulations. Service changes and scheduling impacts on Canada Day include garbage and green bin. There is no collection on Wednesday, July 1st. Collection occurs the day after your regular collection day. Sign up online to receive collection reminders by phone or email, or get the free Kingston Waste app on your Apple or Android device. Kingston Disposal Site 189 Lappin's Lane will be closed Wednesday, July 1st. Kingston Transit. Transit service will operate on a Sunday schedule on Wednesday, July 1st. During the scheduled lift of the LaSalle Causeway that day, Route 60 will offer transit routing between Fort Henry and King's Crossing via the Weyburn Crossing. Kingston Access Bus operates with limited service on Wednesday, July 1st. Call 613-542-2512 for information. Administrative offices are closed on Wednesday, July 1st. This includes Housing and Social Services and Provincial Offenses Court at 362 Montreal Street. Utilities Kingston and Kingston Hydro are closed on Wednesday, July 1st. Utilities Kingston customers experiencing a utility emergency, such as a gas leak, power outage, or water main break, can call the 24-hour emergency line at 613-546-1181. Access useful links and tips to prepare for statutory holiday closures at utilitieskingston.com, including information on holiday electricity pricing. For recreation facilities, the Invista Center, Artillery Park Aquatic Center, Rideau Heights Community Center, and Kingston East Community Center are all closed on Wednesday, July 1st. All branches of the Kingston Frontenac Public Library are also closed. Services and digital collections can be accessed online. Portsmouth Olympic Harbor and Confederation Basin Marinas will remain open. The Kingston Grand Theatre box office will be closed Saturday, June 27th, Sunday, June 27th, and Wednesday, July 1st. Tickets for all shows can be purchased online 24 hours a day at kingstongrand.ca. The Pump House Museum will be open on Wednesday, July 1st, as well as the Test Center for Creativity and Learning. And finally, know before you go, Municipal 511 Mapping provides road closure info across Kingston. Stay informed on any city road closures and find alternative routes by using the Municipal 511 app. An up-to-date map of road closures in Kingston can be found on the city's road closures page. Please note that Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians on Wednesday, July 1st from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Once again, that was your guide to Canada Day in the city of Kingston coming up next Wednesday. Before we get into more local news, let's take a look at your weather and traffic reports for the rest of the week. Starting with a look at traffic around Kingston, in construction and delays, motorists on King Street West from Country Club Drive to Front Road can expect lane reductions as Utilities Kingston continues water and sanitary main installations. Drivers may also encounter delays on Bath Road between Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Portsmouth Avenue as crews install new pedestrian crossing signals. Work continues at the intersection of Montreal Street and John Counter Boulevard with road repairs, sidewalk work, landscaping, and line painting ongoing. Motorists should expect delays on Taylor Kidd Boulevard between Coronation Boulevard and Collins Bay Road as paving and road improvement work continues. And intermittent lane closures remain in effect on John Counter Boulevard between Portsmouth Avenue and Division Street through July 15th for maintenance work. In closures, Aberdeen Street between Johnson and William remains closed for construction staging, while Berry Street near Queen remains closed for work related to 283 Queen Street. Princess Street between Frontenac and Division remains closed as part of the city's major reconstruction project. Wright Crescent between Palace Road and Kingsland Crescent remains closed for roadway repairs and pedestrian safety improvements. Sydenham Street remains closed to through traffic between Princess and Queen for the Sydenham Street Community Space Project. John Street between Montreal Street and Bagot remains closed through July 31st for water and sanitary service upgrades. Norman Rogers Drive between Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Van Order Drive also remains closed for road rehabilitation and safety improvements. Looking ahead, the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed on June 28th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. to allow for the temporary opening of the Marine Navigation Channel. Once again, that closure is coming up this Sunday on the 28th. For FIFA-related events at Springer Market Square, King Street East between Brock and Clarence will be closed from Friday, June 26th through the morning of Sunday, June 28th, while Brock Street between Ontario and Wellington will be closed from June 27th through the morning of June 28th. And finally, Greenwood Park Drive will be closed on Saturday, June 27th from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. for the annual Greenwood Park Drive Block Party. Now turning to your weather forecast, tonight remains cloudy with a 70% chance of showers and a risk of thunderstorms. Temperatures will stay fairly mild overnight with a low of 16 degrees. Friday brings mostly cloudy skies with a 30% chance of showers developing in the afternoon and a risk of thunderstorm. The high reaches 22 degrees, though it'll feel closer to 27 with the humidex. The UV index is 6, which is high. Friday night sees cloudy periods and a low of 14 degrees. Looking ahead to the weekend, Saturday brings a mix of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of showers and a high of 25 degrees. Skies clear Saturday night with a low of 14. Sunday is shaping up to be the pick of the weekend with plenty of sunshine and a high of 27 degrees. Clear skies continue Sunday night with temperatures dipping to 16. That's a wrap on your weather and traffic reports for the rest of the week. Now let's dive back into more local news. Starting off our second half of the show with another update from the City of Kingston, Arts, Recreation, and Community Policies Committee to consider next steps to redevelop Kingston Memorial Center. The City of Kingston is moving forward with its next phase in the proposal to expand and redevelop the Kingston Memorial Center facility, with community use at the heart of the long-term plans. A report will be presented tonight to the City's Arts and Recreation Community Policies Committee. Included in the report is a commitment from Queen's University to advance a long-term structured leasing agreement at an expanded and redeveloped facility, which is part of the city's broader multi-site visioning and capital planning initiative encompassing Center 70 and Portsmouth Olympic Harbor that expands recreation and opportunities for all Kingstonians. The Kingston Memorial Center Recreation Facility, located at 303 York Street in the center of the Williamsville neighborhood, has been a vital hub for community recreation and varsity sports since its construction in 1950. It has been home to Queen's University's men's and women's varsity hockey teams and recreational ice programming for students for nearly two decades. Through the proposed agreement, this would continue. In addition to ongoing support of community recreation programming and events, the redevelopment plans would include the potential for two NHL-sized ice pads, improved locker rooms and training areas, and enhanced spectator experiences. Amy L. Gersma, Director of Recreation and Leisure Services at the City of Kingston, says, quote, "We are excited to bring this opportunity to committee and council as part of the city's long-term planning for recreation infrastructure. Queen's University's interest presents a significant opportunity to explore a shared future for the Kingston Memorial Center," end quote. Queen's University Athletics and Recreation Executive Director Linda Melnick emphasized the strategic importance of the state-of-the-art shared facilities, stating, quote, "Since becoming primary tenants in 2008, Queen's Athletics and Recreation has valued the Memorial Center as a home for our student athletes and recreation program participants, as well as the broader Kingston community," end quote. Learn more about the outcomes of Phase 1 of the Memorial Center, Center 70, and Portsmouth Olympic Harbor Visioning Community Engagement in reports on the city's website. And be sure to stay tuned to CFRC's news programming for the latest. In another major update for the city, City of Kingston's Finds for Food pilot grows fresh produce for local food banks. The City of Kingston is expanding its Finds for Food pilot program by investing a portion of program funding into a modular vertical farm that allows fresh leafy greens year-round for partners in Mission Food Bank. Initially, funding through the Finds for Food program was distributed to local food organizations to help purchase food. Through this pilot expansion, a portion of those funds is now being directed toward local food production, creating a new source of fresh produce for community food programs while strengthening Kingston's food system. In 2023, KFLNA Public Health reported approximately 1 in 3 households in the KFLNA region with food insecurity, meaning they could not afford or buy the food they wanted or needed for good health. After this local data showed a sharp increase in food insecurity, Kingston City Council declared food insecurity an emergency in January 2025. Since then, partners in Mission Food Bank has continued to see growing demand for support, recording a 25% increase in food bank usage in 2026. The demographics are also changing. 19.6% of food bank clients are employed, up from 7% in 2019. As part of its food framework and strategic plan, the City of Kingston sought solutions that could provide immediate relief while also building long-term food system resilience. Food production was identified as a key pillar, leading the city to partner with Grocer Fund through a farm-as-service model. Through the pilot, $80,000 in annual parking fine revenue is supporting the operation of a 40-foot vertical farm that produces fresh leafy greens year-round for local food programs. Fresh, perishable food is the hardest for community organizations to source consistently. Located at Modern Niagara's facility at 945 Princess Street, the vertical farm occupies roughly the space of 2 parking spots and grows nutritious leafy greens such as spinach, romaine lettuce, and pak choi year-round. By growing them locally, the City of Kingston gives local food organizations access to the most in-demand produce year-round, without the spoilage, cost fluctuation, or supply chain guesswork. Mayor Brian Patterson says, quote, "Food insecurity is one of the most urgent challenges facing our community, and it requires both immediate support and longer-term system change. Through the city's food framework and the Fines for Food pilot, we are using an innovative partnership-based approach to help local organizations provide fresh, nutritious food while strengthening Kingston's local food system. This does not replace the need to address the root causes of food insecurity or income-based solutions, but it is a practical way the city can help residents now and build resilience for the future." The Partners in Mission Food Bank runs a 4,000-square-foot grocery store model for its clients, stocking items like milk, cheese, meat, and now fresh greens grown right in town. Over the past 8 months, even throughout the winter, the vertical farm has grown 3,900 pounds of fresh produce for the food bank. Executive Director of Partners in Mission Food Bank, Dan Irwin, says, quote, "Everyone loves it. I come from a small farm. When you have food this fresh, I was never worried about people not loving it. What you pictured as a food bank in 1984 is not correct today. People think we're just donated food, damaged cans with nothing fresh. But we're working to get the top quality produce available for all of our clients, and we now run more like a grocery store," end quote. The local food initiative is supported by a combination of the Fines for Food funding and RBC support. A portion of the $1.5 million donation by RBC to the Food Resiliency Foundation Fund, a grocer donor-advised fund at Ottawa Community Foundation, supports Partners in Mission Food Bank's operation of the farm, allowing them to meet the client demand for fresh food. Misconceptions around food banks can hinder those in need of support. Irwin says, quote, "We introduced our shopping model a little over a year ago so our clients can choose what they want, including fresh produce. I hope it reduces stigma for the people who did not want to come or thought they'd just be getting a food hamper. Volunteers tell me all the time that they love how fresh the greens are and how fresh they smell. And they've heard our clients say how they love the produce and how expensive it is to purchase at regular grocery stores. Volunteers tell me all the time that they love how fresh the greens are, and they've heard our clients say how they love the produce and how expensive it is to purchase at the regular grocery store. Clients also appreciate the added variety the greens add to our selection," end quote. The city will continue to monitor the pilot's impact, including produce grown, household served, distribution partners, operating learnings, and opportunities to strengthen Kingston's local food system. Once again, that was an update directly from the City of Kingston on the unique Fines for Food pilot program. Kingston Fire and Rescue has announced a new deputy chief. Kingston Fire and Rescue is pleased to announce that Mike Keeley has been appointed deputy fire chief. KFR Fire Chief Kevin Donaldson says, quote, "Deputy Keeley is an accomplished fire service professional who has dedicated more than 3 decades to advancing fire and life safety and emergency response in Kingston. He will excel in his new role and continue to serve the city well," end quote. Deputy Keeley has extensive fire service experience, having served with KFR for the past 31 years. Throughout his career, he has progressed through the ranks, serving as a firefighter, captain, and most recently, platoon chief, a position he was promoted to in 2014. Deputy Keeley holds a bachelor's degree in science, a diploma in public policy analysis, and a certificate in fire service leadership, in addition to numerous fire service certifications and diplomas, reflecting his lifelong commitment to professional development and excellence. Chief Donaldson adds, quote, "These qualifications, combined with decades of practical experience spanning several areas of the fire service, have prepared Mike well for the responsibilities of Deputy Fire Chief. As Deputy Fire Chief, he will play a key role in the strategic initiatives and advancement of programs as KFR continues to provide service delivery excellence." Deputy Keeley will assume the role on July 20th, 2026. The role of the Deputy Fire Chief was previously held by Chief Donaldson, who was announced as Fire Chief in March 2026. Before we wrap up this evening, I'm going to run through your weekend forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer to finish off your week. If you're looking to head out after tonight's show wraps up, things get started at 6 p.m. with 20-something Thursday trivia night at the Kingston Frontenac Public Library's Central Branch. At 6:45, Cruise for a Cause departs from Crawford Wharf. Then at 7 p.m., trivia fans have plenty of options with music trivia at Something in the Water Brewing, trivia night at Riverhead Brewing, and music trivia night at La Vida Bistro. Later this evening, karaoke begins at Jersey's at 8:30 and The Buckle at 9. Also at dusk, Springer Market Square hosts a free outdoor screening of The Greatest Showman. At 9 p.m., best-selling author David A. Robertson will present Culture in Action, Storytelling, Anxiety, and Resilience at Chernoff Hall. The night wraps up with the weekly urban music social at La Vida Bistro Bar starting at 9:30. Friday begins with meditation in the gallery at Cultivate Arts Commons at 10 a.m. In the evening, the library after-hours summer kickoff party for teens takes place at the Isabel Turner Branch at 5 p.m. At 7 p.m., the Tet Center hosts the Jarena Lee Studio Exhibition and Artist Talk, while trivia night gets underway at Wild Wings Kingston. Daft Brewing hosts a burlesque show at 8 p.m., and karaoke takes over both The Buckle and Daft Brewing beginning at 9 p.m. Saturday starts bright and early with the Kingston Public Market at Springer Market Square opening at 8:30 a.m., open until 5 p.m. At 10 a.m., visitors can browse the Gananoque Craft Market at Town Hall or head to the Charbert Lake Farmers Market at Charbert Lake Beach. In the afternoon, Books and Beans Pride Edition begins at the Central Branch at KFPL at 1:30, followed by the Your Mark Echoing from Within Art Workshop at the Tet Center at 2 p.m. From 4 p.m. until 9 p.m., La Vida Bistro Bar hosts its Beyond 30 Day Party, celebrating music from the 80s and 90s. The evening wraps up with line dancing at The Buckle from 7 until 8 p.m. Sunday begins with the Memorial Center Farmers Market from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. Confederation Park hosts the Cataraqui Indigenous Market from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m., featuring Indigenous artists, makers, and vendors. Later in the day, Puppies and Jazz takes place at the Caesar Company from 5 until 8 p.m. And finally, the weekend closes out with karaoke at The Merchant and The Toucan, both beginning at 9 p.m. on Sunday. That's a wrap on your weekend forecast. Once again, that's just some of the events coming up this weekend in the region. Be sure to head to CFRC.ca for our full events and concerts listings. If you have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out today via CFRC.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. To revisit episodes and listen on the go, head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
CFRC is stoked to partner with KPP Concerts on an awesome summer lineup. On June 27th, be sure to catch Long Range Hustle and Psycho Billy Legends Reverend Horton Heat on June 28th. On July 3rd, check out alt country legend Fred Eaglesmith, followed by folk punk legend Billy Bragg on July 5th. Emo is alive and well on July 8th with Arms Length and Mo Kenny come to town on July 9th. Hip-hop pioneer Souls of Mischief are here on July 21st, and we'll get some hardcore action with Spaced on July 23rd. Amen Monica brings Arabic jazz to Kingston on August 7th, and finally, August 9th, you can see Lucero Ben Nichols. For tickets and full information on these and other awesome shows, visit kppconcerts.com.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo! Cuomo, my goodness! Nico Cuomo with a touchdown!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston. Welcome to The Thal Project. I'm your host, Saya the Jaffer. The Thal Project is a mini-series that explores Thal, also known as lentils or legumes, and the rich and diverse ways that people of the South Asian diaspora cook it. Today I welcome Rina Kukreja, an activist scholar filmmaker who studies migration. She teaches me Giawali Chana Dal, a Punjabi recipe, alongside sharing her reflections about filmmaking, dal, and memory.
Hi, my name is Rina Kukreja, and I am a South Asian immigrant to Canada, settler, of course. And I'm going to make Giawali Chana Dal, which is actually a Punjabi recipe eaten during the summer months in Punjab.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Delhi, but my family traveled around different parts of India. My mother came from Lahore. She always saw herself as a Lahoria. And my father was from Patiala in Punjab. So both of them were Punjabis, but from different sides of the border. And their cooking styles also varied, so it was interesting. We're going to begin by pre-soaking the chana dal, which, remember, when you're going and buying chana dal, don't end up buying split peas, but buy the regular labeled chana dal because it makes a big difference. And ideally, you pre-soak the chana dal overnight. If you are stretched for time, just heat up water in a kettle and then let it soak for a couple of hours. And if that's also not possible, we just increase the cooking time.
So I see that you have already soaked the chana dal, which is great.
Mm-hmm. So I soaked up 1.5 cups of chana dal yesterday night. So it's had a good soak of 10 hours. And I'm just going to rinse it out again with fresh water. At this moment, I've also put it in a pressure cooker because today I'm going to use pressure cooker. That's what I grew up with in India. And all families, including mine, used to use pressure cooker.
My mom still uses one.
I love it. We're just going to give a rinse to the pre-soaked chana dal to make sure it's all cleared out. There you go. As you can see, the color of the water is slightly changed with the pre-soak. And I'm going to do one more swirl just because it's very satisfying to do that. I do it with hand. I wash my hands before, so I'm a very hands-on person. There you are. And I'm just going to add water, which will be then used for final cooking.
How much water are we adding?
For 1.5 cups, I would add 1 liter of water. You can always reduce the water by putting it on heat once it's boiling. But if you don't put enough water, the chana dal will burn. For today, I went and bought 2 small bottle gold squash. When you're buying this, you'll see it in what is labeled as an ethnic produce section. God, I really hate that labeling. These are long squash that are green, light green in color. When you're buying them, buy the tender ones that are small. And when you press them in the middle, they should be firm. You will find a difference in buying the small tender ones that are firm, unlike the bigger ones, because when you cut them, the flesh inside is a bit drier. And let me just cut one here. You can see the juice coming out almost immediately.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? And that means it's fairly fresh, so it'll have lesser cooking time. And I will begin by peeling this. I grew up peeling it with a grater or a knife. This recipe, chana dal with the ghee, is a very popular one in Punjab, and it's eaten by almost every family. I've worked in Punjab, so I've worked with Dalit families, I've worked with poor farming families, and I've also gone to homes of people who were upper class. And this dal actually cuts across all class and caste barriers. It's very simple. It's made with very humble ingredients. Chana dal is not expensive, and bottle gourd is also very inexpensive. And it is something that people make for hot summer afternoons to be eaten just simply. So I've just peeled off the bottle gourd and I've cut it into a half longitudinally, and then made long strips, maybe 1 centimeter each, because this bottle gourd allowed me to make 3 long strips. And then I make small pieces, roughly around maybe 1 centimeter each. You can see how thin they are.
Yeah, they're quite small pieces.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's the blending of the taste of the dal with the gourd and the ghee and the jeera tempering is what brings the whole dish together. So I'm not too fussy about whether you've cut it in the right size or the shape. It's how long a cooking time you're going to give it. Another thing what I would do while I'm cutting this, just before cutting this, I would actually start up the pressure cooker, warming up the chana dal, because normally I would like the chana dal to come to a boil before I add the bottle gourd. And normally I do it for 3-4 minutes so that the chana dal has time to cook a bit on its own. Chana dal is a bit tricky, right? Because when we buy it from the supermarket, we are never sure how old it is. And the staleness of it matters in terms of how quickly it cooks. The older it is, the longer it takes to cook. It's something that is extremely popular, as I said, amongst the Punjabis. If you go on the net, you'll find lots of variations. I am making a very simple and standard variation with no extensive tadka or tempering of tomatoes or onions, because it is meant for summers. And in summer, when the temperature is reaching 42 or 44, you don't want your stomach to be held back by a heavy, spicy meal. The dal in itself is quite sweet when it comes together. It's not spicy. We just use turmeric and salt. And if you want, a couple of chili peppers that can be added towards the end, and maybe a couple of cloves if you want to add. And that's about it. Again, it's cooked by almost everyone, and it's served simply with rice or with roti, thick rotis. If you go to a dhaba or an eatery, then obviously they'll try to elevate it. It's a dish that you would not normally find in restaurants because it is not considered hot cuisine.
So you mentioned that you spent time in Punjab with farmers and other communities. What were you doing there? Like, when I first met you, I knew you as a documentary filmmaker, and now I also know you as an associate professor at Queen's in Global Development Studies. But I wonder if you want to talk a bit about that trajectory and some of the work you've done historically.
I mean, my early career was as a filmmaker, as a documentary filmmaker, and I worked primarily with rural communities. I began by working on gender issues, understanding the intersection of caste with patriarchy and how that oppressed and exploited lower caste women. And that obviously took me to some parts of India more than others, just because of my language familiarity and the kind of work I was doing with the UN at that time. Because I was working with Dalit or low caste families, I would stay with them and be invited to meals. And that's got me introduced to different ways of cooking different foods, which obviously haven't been recorded because most of the food recipes are done by upper caste, upper class folks, except just in the recent years, there's a changing trend. That's what took me around. It also introduced me to differences in cooking, which was lovely. And I was very appreciative of how people would open their homes and their heart and share food with me and cook sometimes with me. So in my work as an academic, but also continuing my whole interest as a filmmaker, Past few years, I've been working with migrant men, particularly South Asian migrant men. And it's taken me across to Greece, to Portugal, and to Italy. And because I'm middle-aged, with white hair and lots of wrinkles, the men who are younger see me as a maternal figure, an absent mother figure. And we've had these amazing cooking sessions with them, because again, these are encounters that are long duration. I don't stay with them, but I live close to them, and we cook and have meals together. So we've actually made this dal, the ghee chana dal, once, and it was with a group of Pakistani young men. And it was interesting, they were telling me the variation that they added garlic, and I was arguing, no garlic, my mom's from Lahore, she would never do that. Well, you know, one of the young guys said, well, times have changed, garlic would be interesting. And I laughed and I said, yes, you know, that's how recipes evolve. And it would be lovely to bond over recipes, to have them reminiscence about how they were missing their mom's food. And actually, one of the photo voice that I ended up doing with South Asian migrant men in Greece actually started with one of the young men sending me a message with a photograph on WhatsApp and saying, I made this biryani. And, you know, he sent me a picture first, and I wrote back saying, ye kya, what is it? And he said, it's my mom's biryani, I recreated it. And I called him up immediately. He was so proud of it. And he said, when I get married, I'm going to cook this meal, it's really perfect. And when you come back to Athens, I'm going to make it for you. And that started me to do this exhibition to break down the stereotypes we have, the Islamophobic stereotypes we have of the demonic male other. But here I was seeing another dimension of the men who were really lonely, who were craving food. Food is understood, especially by migration scholars, as a sensory nostalgic trigger. Cooking brings you closer to your home that you're missing. The smells, the cutting, all of those are evocative of home, and they create bonding. And that was really lovely. And over a period of time, many of the men shared recipes and desires of what they would cook for their future brides. And that was really touching. And also, I think a couple of them got residency and they went back, and I asked them, what did you cook? They said, we cooked our mom's chicken curry or paratha. And they were shocked, because growing up in rural homes, men often would not cook because the hearth is seen as a female preserve. But here were these men who had become very fluent in cooking because of the very fact of their migrating alone as single men and not having family reunification. Yeah. So there were these kind of, what I would say, very neat subversions happening.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's so beautiful. And when my dad migrated to Canada in the 70s, he did at that time migrate alone. He actually taught my mom how to cook.
Really?
He was cooking for himself, and then he taught her to cook the way he wanted to eat.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then, and, you know, he still does cook a little bit, but mostly my mom for my whole life. She was the one who did most of the cooking for mm-hmm. sure.
Well, that's cool. My mom and dad loved food, and they both loved cooking. And when I was growing up, they would say, Rina, fall in love with a guy who has the same kind of love for food, because if you find a partner who doesn't have a passion for food, you're sunk. The marriage will be on a shaky ground.
What good advice.
Yeah, it is. I like it. And I've got a foodie as my partner. So as you can see, we've just come over to the pressure cooker, and you can see the white foam is gathering on the top, and we are going to be skimming the white foam till the water boils a bit clearer. And it's only when it becomes a bit clearer that I'm going to add turmeric and cloves and salt. We'll just give it another couple of minutes. And in the meantime, normally, if I'm doing this kind of cooking, I make the zeera pulao or cumin seed pulao that accompanies this dish traditionally. So now you can see the water is boiling in the chana dal. And this is where I'm going to be skimming it off. And as you can see, Saida, the water is beginning to run clear.
Yeah. What drew you to documentary filmmaking?
Right.
And to the topics that you've been working with?
Okay, that's an interesting trajectory. So in my undergrad years, I used to go hiking. I joined a hiking club and we would go around to villages. But also remember, I come from, my father's side is a farming family. So they have roots in rural Punjab. And my mother is a displaced migrant, a refugee from the partition. So I was curious about the kind of voices that I was hearing and not seeing them reflected in the mainstream news. I've changed a lot. So at that time, I had this whole savior narrative that I'm going to train myself as a filmmaker and help people whose voices are unheard to be shared across. And that's what I started with. And I did my MFA in filmmaking and documentary filmmaking in India. And I started working on documentaries, primarily working with rural lower caste, lower class women who were struggling to find their ways, dealing with caste oppression. And then as time went on, the kind of dispossessions that they were suffering under neoliberalism. Somewhere very close to the start of my trajectory as a filmmaker came along Chandra Mohanty's, the seminal article that she published in 88, Under Western Eyes.
Under right? Western Eyes.
It just blew me away. I read that article and I said, damn, what am I going to do? The whole premise of my filmmaking was built on a very problematic construct. And it led me to reflect and then build in collaborations with the women. I've just put in 1 teaspoon of turmeric once the water has run clear. And now I'm adding a little less than a teaspoon of salt. I let it boil for 2 or 3 minutes more just to get the chana dal a bit softened. As you can see, the bottle gourd is fairly tender. And if I let it cook as it should with the chana dal for 10 minutes, once the pressure is reached, they'll become mush. So you do want to see some slight pieces that are kind of whole. Yeah, let it boil. And so I was saying, normally when I'm cooking this, I put the jeera rice to cook at the same time. You heat up a pan with ghee, add the jeera or the cumin seed, the cloves, optional, tejpatta or bay leaf, the Indian bay leaf. Let them change color, then add the rice, the pre-washed rice, 1 cup. Swirl it around in the ghee till the ghee is coated and then add water. So 1:2 proportion is what I use. Cover it. Before covering it, I add salt. Then you have 2 dishes, the main and the carb, cooking away. And you can supplement it with a raita or a yogurt dish. It can be a very simple raita with dry roasted cumin seeds ground up and added to the yogurt, which is thinned with adding a bit of water and salt and black pepper. Again, the focus is on using minimal spices that will help move your sluggish digestion process, because the heat can really make you not want to eat spicy fried food. This is like a calming thing that you come to. And I have beautiful memories of coming back from school absolutely exhausted at 2 p.m. and asking mom, kya bana hai? And she would say, pulao aur ghiya wali dal. And I would just sigh in happiness because I knew the taste that was coming out. And so when Paritosh, my partner, started dating me, he also started coming to my house. He came first to my house for my mom's food, and then we fell in love. We would hear his mobile coming roughly around 2 p.m., just the time for lunch, and he had that same reaction of, ah, chana dal, because it's simple but hits all the sweet spots. Let's go back and add the bottle gourd that has been cut to the dal. And as you can see, now the quantities of the water seems a bit less. I would add a tiny bit more water just to be cautious. 1/2 cup, and then I cover it with the pressure cooker. If you're using a regular pot on the stovetop, I would say once it comes to a boil, put a timer on for 20 minutes and then come and keep stirring it once in a while. It's building the pressure. Once the pressure comes on, you'll hear a sound, and that's when then I put the timer on. We've done 10 minutes. As you can see, it's whistling away. If you're using an Indian style pressure cooker, this is a Lagostina. It gives a long, low kind of whistle. The Indian one that I have at home gives these sharp bursts. I think one of the biggest joys of cooking food is sharing, and that's what I love. It's cooked for a bit, 10 minutes. I would switch off the heat off and let this come to a rest. After a minute of the heat being switched off, you'll hear the whistling sound abate. And that's when then I'll do a quick check. Yeah. It'll stop.
A lot of dals are simple, mm-hmm. and some of them are more complicated. Where do you stand? Are there more complicated dals that you really love? To you, should dal be complicated?
I see dal as a very uncomplicated, simple dish that brings out and enhances the flavor of the lentil itself. Sometimes I like dals that have some vegetable built in, like there's a dal that we use in Punjab again, which is green moong dal with palak or spinach, which again is a fantastic combination. And if you look at it, when you add lemon juice, it helps the absorption of the iron from the spinach. Again, those are simple one meal dishes, but extremely elegant in the nuanced taste they bring. Sometimes a dish like dal makhani, that is extremely popular in restaurants, we don't make often in our homes. It's used for festive occasions, and those are richer dishes. They are like a dish. It's not an everyday dal. And if you were to ask me the range of dals I would cook as every day, I think around 40 days would go by before I would repeat any of the dal recipe. There are various combinations I use. There's another cookbook that I've really loved. It's called 1000 Recipes. It's written by an Indian origin woman who is an immigrant to North America. She has recreated some very non-mainstream dishes, dishes that I'm familiar with, like turnip and carrots cooked at home as a meal. Dishes that you normally would not find in these fashionable cookbooks. It's one of my other go-to books, and it is one book that I'm going to be gifting to my daughter as she enters university.
That's so wonderful. What a lovely gift.
You can hear that the whistle's reduced.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bring the pressure cooker. I'm going to bring it straight to the sink and tilt it to the side, not on the top, and then I let cold water run on the side just to release the pressure. Now you can see the pressure's eased off, there's no more whistling, and you heard that click.
Yeah.
That means that now it's safe for me to open the pressure cooker. You can also release the pressure by using the valve here.
Yeah, you can see how soft the dal is.
Right, so it's become soft. You can see adding a bit of water was fantastic. It's not soupy, it's stewy. If you want it slightly thick, I would put the heat on and reduce it. But I think this is perfect for the moment. All I'm going to do is now give it the tempering of ghee with jeera and then add a bit of lemon juice as an optional thing later on. And let's heat our pan. I'm heating up 2 tablespoons, I think.
You said 2 tablespoons.
So I make the ghee myself at home,
So
you know. Yeah.
How special.
So I have put 2 tablespoons of ghee in a pan and let it heat up. And meanwhile, I take the cumin seeds. And today I'm using a small additional tempering of red dried chili peppers, primarily because I didn't add any chili powder or chili flakes in the dal. I'm taking 2 whole chilies that are long. They are again bought from an Indian store. They are Indian chilies. One time I used Calabrian chilies that are killer hot. I nearly died. So Indian chilies sometimes are sweeter than the Calabrian ones. They're smaller, but do they carry a punch.
Looks like about a teaspoon and a half of cumin.
I break them in half just because it's easier. It all depends on what my mind and hand wants to do at that exact moment when I have the chilies in my hand. I mean, it's such a sensorial thing holding the dried chilies. It brings back memories of learning to do this growing up, and sometimes you do it without thinking, but it all comes together. The ghee has started warming up. You can see small bubbles coming at the bottom, so you know the ghee is ready. Swirling the jeera, and then I add I've cut them in three. That's what my hand and my mind decided to do. And I've just raised the pan up from the fire because, again, it's an electric heat. It's a bit difficult to manage. And I will bring it straight to the... Okay. And then you add a bit of the dal to the pan to make sure you get all of the tempering out.
Perfect. You got it. Well, it smells amazing.
And then we do the taste test. And then adding a bit of the lemon juice. And you don't want to add too much of the juice because you want the sweetness of the ghee and the dal. The chana dal, when it's cooked, is usually quite sweet. Say that you should really taste the dal and see.
So refreshing and simple. Mm-hmm. But there is still some undertone of heat.
Slight. And the chili would be less. I mean, if you don't want the chili heat, you can always not put it.
Right.
It's totally optional.
It is very mild.
Dish. So the combination works really well with the rice, the jeera pulao, and the raita, and the other side dish that I made on the side, which I learned in my 30s from my colleague's mom, and which I have grown to use and carried over in my migratory journey.
How beautiful.
Thank you
so much, Reenak. I want us to come back to the documentary piece.
Yeah, Chandra Mohanty's article caused an earthquake in my head just as I was embarking on my filmmaking career because I was questioning where would my voice stand and would I be appropriating people's voices and creating further visual mediatized exploitation of women from the global south. Eventually, I started involving them in decision making, right from holding gatherings, actually having them decide what was going to be the focus of each of the documentaries. Sometimes it didn't go well with the funders because I was working for UN organizations, but other times it needed some persuasion. And then having the women sit with me as we storyboarded the documentary, and sometimes they also worked with me in the field as associate camera person, audio recorder. In one of the documentaries that I ended up doing, they also worked with me as we edited the film. And sometimes they decided to not include certain stories just because they felt it would be to the detriment of their community or it did not serve the larger purpose. Very interesting and conscious decisions taken by the women, which I learned to respect. If I was not reflective, I might not have done that because I was pulled up by such silences and omissions. Learning to listen to the women, working with them, and understanding that their larger goal was very different was really important for me, especially if I wanted to work alongside and not impose my voice. That's continued even with the men. The guys decided for the photo voice, the exhibition that I did with the South Asian migrant men in Greece. And this year, I've just come back from another photo voice that I've done with Italo-Bangladeshis. These are Bangladeshi origin folks who have moved to Italy. And I worked with a group of them in the larger Veneto or the Venice area, and the same. So they chose the focus, they chose the layout and how it should flow. Whenever I'm cooking any of the dals that I grew up with, because I have moved away from my home, I moved away from my family. When I cook here in Kingston, I sometimes am transported back to memories of cooking with my family, learning to cook with my mom and her sisters, or the cooking that was done, say, in a pind or a village in Punjab, where some of the things would happen. And so again, food evokes nostalgia in different ways. It's very sensorial. The smell transports me back. Sometimes just seeing the clouds in the sky want me to make a dal, a particular dal that we would cook during a rainy season. And dals are a dense expression of how simple things can get transposed to a very elevated level of satisfaction that's very hard to sometimes tell people who think dal makhni is the only dal for India. That's about it, I'd say.
Thank you, Reena.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for listening to The Dal Project. Email me at dalproject@protonmail.com. Dal is spelled D-A-A-L. The intro and exit music are excerpts from the song Creep by Lal. Thanks for tuning in.
CFRC 101.9 FM is so thrilled to announce the launch of our brand new accessible website at cfrc.ca. Get your local news, stream your favorite shows, and stay up to date with upcoming